Hi, I'm Yusuf Zine. My latest TVO Today podcast is on how a Canadian ends up in a Chinese prison and if he's even alive. Listen and subscribe to Extradition. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
For more in-depth perspectives and interesting stories, sign up for our daily newsletter at tvo.org/daily.
It's been something of a slugfest between the provincial government and the unions that represent Ontario's teachers. They disagree over class sizes, ventilation, and whether the reopening plan violates the province's own health and safety rules. In fact, the dispute is headed to the Ontario Labour Relations Board. Last week, we heard from the Minister of Education. Tonight, it's the union's turn. Sam Hammond is in downtown Toronto. He represents more than 80,000 elementary school teachers and education workers. Harvey Bischoff is in North York, and he represents more than 60,000 secondary school teachers and education workers. And Liz Stewart is in Midtown Toronto and represents more than 45,000 Catholic school teachers. And she is in Midtown, as we suggested. And I think this is the first time the three of you have been together for one television interview in one setting. So we're glad you are doing it on TVO tonight. Let's just get the immediate feedback from what you're hearing. Sam Hammond, start us off. You've been in touch with your teacher members. What are they telling you about the state of play today?
Well, Steve, our members since day one have let us know how concerned they are, how anxious they are about the lack of a real reopening plan that focuses truly at all levels on the health and safety of our members and students. But even with that anxiety and concern, they have, as I know the other affiliate members have, gone into classrooms to do what they do best, and they are trying to make the best of a really bad situation.
Harvey, what are you hearing from your people?
Well, you know, very similar. An absolute commitment to provide whatever kind of support and confidence they can to the students in their classes while feeling a great deal of anxiety on their own. A lot of that anxiety arises out of the fact that plans have been so unclear. There's been just an abdication of leadership from the Ministry of Education. Boards are scrambling as late as Sunday. Teachers in Windsor, members of mine, didn't know what they were supposed to be teaching a four-hour class of on Monday. So that kind of uncertainty just increases the anxiety and the difficulty in doing their best on behalf of their students.
And Liz Stewart, how about you?
Well, I mean, very similar to my colleagues, right? We have members all across the province who, you know, their students are just returning to school. They're not even sure who's on their class list, what it is they're going to be teaching. So all of those anxieties, and also the general anxiety about how do we keep everybody safe. But I also know that they're very excited, right? You know, the start of a school year always brings that excitement about meeting your new students and getting to know them as people as you move through the year. But this year, it's definitely heavily overlaid with real anxieties.
Well, Sam, there's no question this is a year unlike any other, a beginning of school year unlike any other. But I think the most up-to-date numbers we've seen is that about 3/4 of the children in this province are going back to school. Do you have to infer from that apparently a lot of people have at least a modicum of confidence in what the provincial government is doing?
Steve, I would suggest to you, no, I haven't done a, you know, scientific survey, research-based survey, but I would suggest to you from what I have heard from parents across this province on social media, directly and in emails, is that many of them don't have a choice in terms of having their children return to school. There are so many equity issues in terms of, you know, I just saw recently a single mom with two students in the public system who has no choice. She needs to go to work and she needs to send those kids back to school. So I wouldn't suggest that the fact that 70 to 75% of people, parents who are sending their kids back to school are doing it because they're confident in the system. I think far from it.
Okay, Harvey, not confident, let's grant that. Let's say no parent's going to put their own child willingly in danger, even if they have to make a living. So can we conclude that there's at least some confidence in the ministry, in the government, in the school boards, in your teachers to do a good job and figure this all out?
There's effort on the part of my members and their representatives to do a good job and figure this out. I haven't seen the same kind of commitment from the ministry that has repeatedly refused to have any meaningful consultation with us. You know, I think there's a slightly different calculation between, the risk for any individual student, that's the calculation that parents are making, and the risk to the system as the whole. And so what is the likelihood that things are going to go wrong somewhere in the system? And that's what we should be trying to avoid, as opposed to, you know, undertaking that individual student kind of calculation.
Well, let me pick up on that with Liz. Liz, every school in the province apparently has a plan in place whereby if a student or teacher or caretaker or whoever contracts COVID-19, everybody knows what to do. There's a plan in place and it becomes in effect. Are you comfortable and or confident that that's going to happen?
Well, I mean, it depends on how well that plan is communicated. Do people actually know what the steps are? Who has ultimate responsibility? Is it the public health? Is it the school boards? Because, I mean, frankly, the haphazard approach up to this point has been quite stunning, as we've been trying to put plans in place. And the other piece is what we have been pushing for is, isn't it better to have prevention measures in place? Isn't it better to try and make sure we don't have to worry about possible outbreaks in schools? And that's where we have been wanting to talk about for months.
Sam, what about the fact, I mean, the Minister of Education was on this program last week saying we have more public health nurses being able to fan out to more schools than ever before. We've put more money in than ever before in order to take care of deep cleaning and physical distancing and additional money for additional teachers. Not as many as you want, admittedly, but more. He thinks he's got his bases covered at this stage of the game anyway. What do you say?
Well, first of all, he hasn't put more money in than ever before because this is the first time we've had to deal with this kind of a situation in Ontario. And, you know, this goes back in terms of the money, the investment, Steve, to your previous question about confidence in the system. I would suggest to you that if the minister had actually done what he said he was going to do, he and the premier in June, that they were going to cap class sizes at 15 and make sure that that happened, in addition to ensuring that buses weren't running at capacity, I'll bet you right now we would have seen probably 99 to 100% of parents back in classrooms. So I think the biggest investment where the minister has fallen short is with regards to cohorts and smaller class sizes and not leaving that up to school boards.
I appreciate your position on that. And let me follow up with Harvey on that. I guess the fact of the matter is if you wanted to cap class sizes at 15, you would essentially have to find almost twice as much space as is currently constituted in the education system in order to educate the children in that way. That sounds like a logistical impossibility. How could they even have done that had they wanted to?
Had they begun, you know, working on this plan by the end of March when we began pleading with them to work with us on the reopening, not knowing at that time when it would come, but knowing it would be an enormously complicated project, maybe one of the most complicated a provincial government in Ontario has ever undertaken to reopen schools in a pandemic, we would not have achieved perfection, but we could have come a lot closer to meeting what has been defined over and over again by public health experts as the number one priority for making the return to school safe, which is reducing the number of students in class and allowing for the same physical distancing that's required in every other public space in the province. And why that doesn't apply to schools is a mystery to me. So they could have gotten a lot closer. And instead, we are seeing classes of 30, 33 high school students in non-designated boards, 30 junior and senior kindergartens together in a single class, which is, you know, mind-boggling, frankly. And, you know, I'd echo the words of a Globe and Mail editorial just yesterday that said that it beggars the imagination that we are returning to classes of that size.
Liz, what are you hearing from your Catholic teachers about how well they are able to, for example, put the desks at least one, but maybe even 2 meters apart in order to accommodate physical distancing protocols?
Well, I mean, it's next to impossible, right? I mean, getting the 1 meter has been a great struggle. And in many places, they're just not able to do it. I mean, if you think about your average classroom, you'd have to strip every other piece of furniture out of the classrooms. And some of it is fixed to the walls. So it's impossible to do. So I think what we've been hearing is, you know, that's certainly a concern, the distancing. It's access to running water and the ability for hand washing. It's access to PPE, which, you know, we still hear is not in place everywhere across the province. It's making sure there's hand sanitizer available within classrooms. It's actually hand sanitizer that children can use, because that would be a number one priority, you would think. And it's making sure that there's proper ventilation. I mean, in many of our schools, the windows don't open. And even if they do open, they don't open enough to really generate that airflow that's required. And certainly the school ventilation systems are not built for this. So there's a whole myriad of issues. And distancing is one important piece of it. And it's, you know, one that is just not possible.
Sam, let me do one more go round on class sizes with you. And this is going to sound like a smart aleck question, but it's really not meant to be. I know you want smaller class sizes for the very legitimate reasons that you've put on the record here right now. But of course, I've talked to government sources as well who say, of course, the teacher unions want smaller class sizes because that means we'll have to hire a lot more teachers. They'll get more union dues. And then when the next election comes around, there will be that many more people who are going to try to unelect us than would have been the case before. I see you shaking your head already, but speak to that argument if you would.
Well, here's my response, Steve. Shame on this government for suggesting that's what we at ETFO or anyone else is doing, parents and every other stakeholder in this province. This has nothing to do with our call for smaller class sizes related to pedagogy, et cetera. This is simply our call for smaller class sizes is simply related to the health and safety of students and our members in this system now. And we know full well that those teachers that are hired on to reduce those class sizes, once this is over, we'll go through our staffing processes and we'll be once again, probably in a year or so, arguing to make classes smaller for very different reasons.
Harvey, I take your point on this, and I am not for a second disputing the genuineness with which the three of you are making this argument. But I wonder if you are the right messengers for this argument, given that you do open yourselves up to the possibility that you're really just trying to increase membership in addition to the other things that you've mentioned. What about that?
You know, I've seen the premier do this before the pandemic struck during bargaining. He's doing it again now. He wants to turn this into a battle between his government and unions because he thinks that's good ground for him. And it's a distraction from the real issues. But let's be clear, if the unions were the only ones saying we need smaller class sizes, you know, he may have a point. Fact is, parent groups, medical experts, the Ontario Principals Council, you know, multiple groups are opposing this inadequate return to school plan. And, you know, if we're not the best messengers to some people, fine, listen to the parents groups who are grassroots society members who are saying over and over and over again, this is not sufficient.
Liz, one more thing on this, and that is, I do remember some weeks back, the Ontario Liberals coming out with, I think what they said was a $3 billion plus costed plan, which would have involved a lot of the things that all three of you have mentioned here tonight on TVO. Part of that plan, I gather, would have involved the hiring of, say, 17 to 20,000 new teachers in order to achieve some of these goals that you've pointed out. Even if you had the money for that and wanted to do that, are there 20,000 teachers out there available to come teach right now?
Well, I mean, I think there's been a myriad of solutions. I mean, the Toronto District School Board put forward a solution as well that wouldn't have involved that kind of hiring and wouldn't have involved that kind of price tag. So I think from what we've been saying is we need to reduce class size. There's many different ways that we can do that. We've been more than willing to be flexible, come to the table, have those conversations, but the ministry just hasn't wanted to listen. And look, you know, it's not just us saying that distancing is necessary and so therefore we need to reduce class sizes. We also have to think about what's the rationale for having schools open. A big push has been that it's also for the mental health and well-being of students, that we make sure that they're able to be in classrooms. But in order for that to be maintained, we need to make sure it's a successful and sustainable reopening. And, you know, on a purely economic level, we need it to be a sustainable reopening, and therefore an investment needs to be made.
With just a few minutes left here, let me do one more go around with the three of you here. And obviously, the Ministry of Education is the one you deal with most of the time. But the fact is, you all have dealings with the Ministry of Labor as well, because if you believe the classrooms are unsafe, you have to deal with the Ministry of Labor in order for your teachers to say, that's an unsafe classroom, and I just don't feel comfortable going to work there that day. Sam, start us off on that. How often are you hearing from your teachers, I don't think it's safe, I'm afraid to catch COVID, I can't show up for work today?
Well, in terms of them feeling anxious and concerned that it's not safe based on a number of different issues, just about every day. But the next step to that is that they, as employees with school boards, taking the next step to say that they think it is an unsafe work condition and starting that process through the administrator and through the Ministry of Labor. It is very concerning, because I think the first thing is that, you know, the Minister of Education has not mandated actual a 1 meter, 2 meter distancing in schools, hasn't mandated a number of students that should be on school buses, hasn't actually mandated a cap on class sizes per se. So we're leaving it, Steve, to our individual members to make those determinations based on the information that we've provided them.
Harvey, how are the secondary teachers handling this?
Yeah, so through our local leaders, we provided training to members about their rights under the Occupational Health and Safety Act. A worker in Ontario has the right to refuse unsafe work. For teachers, that's a limited right. Their first obligation is to their students, and they have to secure the health and safety of their students first. But then they can exercise the steps where they have objective reason to believe they may be unsafe. For example, there hasn't been PPE provided.
Liz, any Catholic school teachers, to your knowledge, declining to show up for work so far?
We have a couple of work refusals last week. Our members are well aware of their rights under the Occupational Health and Safety Act, and I do know that some felt they needed to exercise those rights. That the situation, to the best of my knowledge, has been resolved. And that's what will happen on a case-by-case worker, it's situation, for example, a worker will, may refuse unsafe work, and then hopefully the situation is able to be resolved to everyone's satisfaction at that site level. But I think, further is that the government did not, the ministry did not give firm standards to school boards about what had to be in place. And because they didn't issue those orders, we have a myriad of different ways across the province that are being rolled out. And that is why, we as affiliates find ourselves, before the Labour Board again, with a complaint filed because of that lack of health and safety standard.
Well, I know these are incredibly long and busy days for you three, and I'm really grateful that we were able to get all three of you on TVO tonight to take our questions. Sam Hammond, Harvey Bischoff, Liv Stewart, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you. Thanks.
The Agenda with Steve Paikin is brought to you by the Chartered Professional Accountants of Ontario. CPA Ontario is a regulator, an educator, a thought leader, and an advocate. We protect the public. We advance our profession. We guide our CPAs. We are CPA Ontario. And by viewers like you. Thank you.